The Parable of Archbishop Voce. This is episode number 759 of The Next Step, December 22nd, 2022.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries, welcoming you to a 15th season of The Next Step podcast with Father Vazgen. With these podcasts, Father Vazgen provides a very distinct and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy. It is the means for providing people an intelligent and practical answer to life's difficulties, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by our Lord, Jesus Christ. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course, the neophyte. So we invite you to sit back, turn up the volume, and get ready to take the next step.
If the preacher moves, goes somewhere else, or dies, that movement is dead. But I might go. But the church will never collapse because my foundation is Christ. My foundation is my church, not me.
The voice, the words, and the understanding of himself and life. Archbishop Voce Hovsepian, of blessed memory. The longest serving clergyman in the entire world, bar none, went to his eternal rest last Sunday. And I know we're a few days before Christmas, but we're going to take a little break from the Christmas holiday. And actually, we're going to find out that it actually plays right into the Christmas message. But I'm jumping ahead. Yeah, you are on the next step. And my spiritual father, Archbishop Voce Hovsepian, passed away last Sunday. And we're going to take a break because last Sunday evening, while it was still fresh, I put out a small little podcast, my daily message. And I got such incredible reaction to it. People who were talking about particularly the one sentiment about the generation that I spoke about. So we're going to be talking about that. And I thought that today we'll take a little bit of a more intimate and give you a look at who this person was, why he was so special in my life. In many ways, who I am today was shaped by Archbishop Voce. Affectionately, we'd call him Voce Surpazon. He was the leader of our church for 32 years. He went into retirement just about 20 years ago, but never retired. He was a priest all the time, and you felt it every time you were with him. I was very fortunate that he was a big, big part of my life, a major influence in my life. I lost my father in 1991, and even before that, he was such a big player in my life. But after that, too, the kind of care that he took for me was not unique. He cared about people. He cared about especially young people. He cared about the future. He cared about people who had something to offer, not just themselves or their own personal gains, but something to offer his most treasured love. And that was the Armenian church, as you heard just a moment ago. And we play it again.
But I might go, but the church will never collapse because my foundation is Christ. My foundation is my church, not me.
So if you'll sit back and relax a little bit, it's Christmas weekend, what I thought I'd do is do a small tribute to Archbishop Voce Hovsepian in a very humble manner, because really his life was so eventful. It was such a full life. He was ordained a priest in 1951. And if you know anything about the Armenian church history, you know that those were turbulent years between 50 and 60, 65. He was ordained. He was sent to Great Britain, to Scotland, where he studied at Edinburgh, and he'd take a lot of pride. In fact, at my ordination, he was my ordaining bishop. At my ordination, he was so excited because one of his schoolmates was in attendance. And I apologize, I can't remember his name, but he had come and he was the guest of Archbishop Vacha. And so he had him attend and be a part of our service. He was an Anglican priest. And that's documented in the video. And by the way, everything I talk about today, I'll try to make sure that we have links on today's show notes, including my ordination. I'll put a link on today's show notes. During the ordination, he speaks about his time in Edinburgh in his words and about the guest that is there. But in his speech, in his sermon, you understand, if you never knew Archbishop Vacha, you will definitely know him just by his words. It was a man who didn't mince those words. He didn't. You got what you saw. What's the expression? You get what you see? Exactly. He'd tell you. He'd tell you the way he felt. He was brash. I think I've shared this story once. As a young priest, he asked me to accompany him once to an ecumenical service. And this was amidst all kinds of different denominations. Primarily, most of them were, aside from the Roman Catholic delegate that was there, most of them were Protestant. Catholic and, of course, Protestant make up most of what we have here in the United States. And I'll never forget, I was with him, and they called him up to speak. And he just got up and he said, "You," and he pointed to everybody who was there in the audience. He said, "You have a lot to learn from us." I mean, we're the smallest church there is. We're the smallest people there is. And he's telling this huge congregation of different priests, ministers, different denominations. He's telling them, "You have a lot to learn from us." And I'm kind of like sinking into my seat thinking, uh-oh, you know, like, did we violate some protocols? But no, you got to have more faith in Vacha Sarpazan. He knew exactly. And he was so charismatic. He had the group in his hands with that statement, because his following statement was, "And we," the Armenian church, "we have a lot to learn from you." And that was that sentiment was really what he was about. Yes, he took a lot of pride in who we were as Armenian Christians, what Armenian Orthodoxy meant, what the Armenian Church meant, but he was also so open to the idea of change. And I think it came from his European education, being around people who had a broader understanding of Christianity, let's say a Western understanding. And so he melded the West and the East very nicely. And you felt that in your in his presence. There's so many stories, I don't know where to begin. But I could start from the beginning of when I became a priest, when I was 21 years old. He took me to the seminary of Holy Etchmiadzin. I had finished my bachelor's work here at USC and here in the States. And I had submitted my letter asking the Archbishop to take me as a postulate, to take me as a candidate for the priesthood, which would mean that I would need to go through the seminary education. And so we packed up and he took me to Etchmiadzin in Soviet Armenia, 1977. This is during the time of Brezhnev. Yeah, this was pretty. This is like at the height of the Cold War. Reagan hadn't come in yet. There was no glasnost. There was no perestroika. There was no Gorbachev or anything. This was the height of the Cold War. And so this is my first time going into Armenia, and we spent a night at the Hotel Russia, or I think that's what it's called, Hotel Russia in Moscow. It's the one that's right across the street from the Kremlin. And that was an interesting evening because there were I guess, people who were listening to what we were saying. You know, you hear all these things about it wasn't a free country, and it definitely wasn't in many ways. But we spent that interesting night in Moscow, and then we went to Yerevan. And along the way, there was a few things that I can never get out of my mind. First of all, he knew that it was difficult for me because even though I was 21 years old, you know, my father had convinced me that, you know, the draft had just ended here in the United States. And he said that, you know, a type of discipline will be important, which the Army was something that gave. So he said, even if you are contemplating becoming a priest, he says, just the time in Etchmiadzin will be important. And my dad encouraged me for the discipline's sake, too. And so I did go to Etchmiadzin, and it was going to be a couple of years of away from – now, this is – remember, 1977, folks. There is no internet. There is no free communication, telephone calls. Oh, no way. We're talking about third world. Telephone calls didn't make it. So I'm basically gearing up for a couple years of being away from everybody. I got a couple aging grandmothers at home, then, and I had to say goodbye with the thought that maybe I might not see them when I get back. It was a very emotional time, and you know, my brothers, sisters, my friends, my girlfriend, we're all, you know, we're living a normal life, and now I'm going to just like tear this whole thing apart. I'm going to go to the Soviet Union for who knows how long, and would I come back? What would happen? It was very emotional. And not to mention the absurdity of what we were talking about. We're talking about going into the Soviet Union, like we're talking about atheist with a capital A, to do what? To study at a seminary? Now that I think about it, you see how absurd this thing was. But here was the beautiful part. Let me back up a little bit. Vacha Serpazon became a priest during, I said, it was turbulent times in the 1950s, 1960s, within the Armenian community. And some of it had to do with what was going on in the States, including the McCarthy era. And there were times where if you're not familiar with the McCarthy era, there's another good link. I'll make sure that's on the show notes. But it was basically catching communists here in America to the point that if you were accused of being a communist, it was your job to prove that you were not. Quite opposite what our Constitution says, or basically the framing of our system of law, is that you are innocent until proven guilty. In other words, you could be sitting someplace, you have a smoking gun in your hand, and the bullet has gone out, and there's a dead body next to you. You're still innocent. There is no way. They have to prove that it was you who did the murder or anything or any act. And in this case, it was enough that they accused you of being a communist, and then your life was basically shot. You were thrown out. This was the McCarthy era. And Vacha Serpazon came out of that at a very difficult time because the allegiance to Etchmiadzin made it difficult. And unfortunately, this is what I meant by within the Armenian community, it was turbulent too. Armenians against Armenians because of things, absurdities like their political views. And I remember on the flight there was a really important conversation we had. And it went something like this, that being Armenian it trumps everything else, the politics and everything like that. He said, we're going to Armenia. He says, that's our homeland. We're going to Etchmiadzin. That's the center of our faith. And he said, today it's in communist hands. Tomorrow it might be free, but it'll always be ours. And, you know, to this day I remember that. And probably those of you who've listened to The Next Step enough, you could see where some of my – I mean, I admit it. A lot of who I am right now is because of Archbishop Vacha and the things that he taught us along the way, not by explanations but by living it. And this was a very – it sounds simple, yet it's very, very profound, that land, that Etchmiadzin is yours. There is no system, whether it's capitalist, communist, whether it's free, it's an independent state, whether it's under oppression, it's still your land, and it's still your church. It's the only place in the world, the only cathedral, the only church in the world where Jesus Christ descended and said, this is where you will build the church. Etchmiadzin. I mean, the name itself means exactly that. And so this was one of the conversations we had on the plane, that, you know, you're going to someplace very sacred, very special. I remember he also sensed that I wasn't feeling, you know, I was very emotional that day. And he told me this was like one of those 1977. I don't know what kind of plane it was. It was one of the big Boeing crafts. I don't want to say that it wasn't a 747, but it definitely had those center seats where you could put up the armrests and make a bed out of it. And he gave up his seat. He says, why don't you lie down? I'm going to go up in the front. And I didn't know what he was going to do. This is my first time going on a flight that's farther than Fresno, you know. So I laid down. And I don't remember how long, but after a while I got up and went searching on the plane to find him. And there he was. I remember as vivid as I do of what I did this morning. I remember seeing in front of my eyes, there was the Archbishop of the Western Diocese, a prince of the Armenian Church, and he's just curled up on the floor in a small little area, asleep. In other words, he had given up his seat for my comfort. And I cannot forget that kind of humility, that kind of humbleness, that kind of sacrifice. If you knew him, if you talked to him, you'd never think of him as this kind, you know, because he kept the dignity of his office up high, but a very, very humble and loving and caring father. He officiated at our wedding. He became a spiritual father, not only to me, but to Susan as well. Remember when we first got married, it once came over to our house. It was coming to eight when we were in Cupertino, so he had to spend the night, and he made us some French fries. He loved French fries. Here's the Archbishop cooking on our apartment stove some French fries. He then consecrated me into the priest, ordained and consecrated me as a priest of the Armenian Church, and something that I am forever grateful to him. He gave me the name that I don't know, that I definitely didn't deserve, the name of the Catholicos, Vazgen I, of blessed memory. Forever, I thank him. What an honor that was to receive the name. Vazgen I was one of the most beloved patriarchs of our people, having served, and one of the longest serving patriarchs, Catholicoi, of our church. It's kind of weird for me to even have to qualify his name. Let me say it that way, because so much of our life was filled with Vazgen I and his influence. And now when we say it, we have to qualify it by saying, well, he was the Catholicos between 1955 and 1994. And there are generations that never had that privilege of knowing him. And I'm taking this moment right now to sharing another great of the church who was great in my life. And I know we have so many listeners around the world. We have people who want to know, you know, I get a lot of this. I get a lot of this, people saying, what made you go into the priesthood? What made you do this? Okay, so today I'm giving you a little bit of that background. Yeah, I'm not going to just like pour my heart out and everything. This is like one of the puzzle pieces. This is one of the puzzle pieces. And that's Archbishop Vacehov Sepian. He ordained me a priest and, of course, assigned me to one of the best places he could have. And that was the San Jose, Cupertino area. And that was, the rest is history. I got to be the priest of Silicon Valley for the first 15 years of our ministry. We had our three children up there. They're all San Joseans. And we erected the St. Andrew Armenian Church in Cupertino. And let me tell you something. If you have not been there, if you haven't visited, drop everything you can right now and make plans to go and visit the St. Andrew Armenian Church in Cupertino, California. It is beautiful. It's just an architectural marvel in that in the middle of Silicon Valley during the 80s, and I have to qualify this too, if you knew the stories that went with building that, constructing that, it really is a marvel. And like I said, you got to see it to believe it, okay? And very thankful for the Father Dantev Hartunian, who continues the mission going up there. Just wonderful to see the excitement that's at that church. Archbishop Vache, he continued in our lives very close, intimately. He was the one who baptized all three of my children. He's the one who married them. And it's kind of interesting. He married us, baptized our children, married our children. It's like a beautiful full circle, you know, when you think about it, how fortunate we are in our lifetime to be able to have somebody who is sacramentally connected to us. We left there. He moved me in 1996 from Cupertino to the St. Gregory Armenian Church in Pasadena. And then in 2003, he had me established for the success we had at St. Gregory, especially with youth. He assigned me to go and start the Armenian Church Youth Ministry in Glendale, California, and entrusted me with that new project of the diocese, which we continued for a good 15 years and then became the St. Peter Parish in Glendale. So it was a beautiful time, a beautiful ministry that having with me, and you know, it was like family. My mother worked for him. My mother started working for him the year that I went to Armenia. I'm sitting in at the seminary and I get a letter from my mom saying, by the way, I've got a job. I'm the secretary at the diocese. And she eventually moved up to be his personal secretary, his executive secretary, which she very competently did. But it also cemented a very beautiful relationship between our families. They were very much like brother and sister. He would say it and she would say it, that, you know, there was a very beautiful relationship between the two of them. Yeah, they'd give it and they'd give it and take it between them, as we would too. You know, I mean, let's not fool ourselves. In any family, there are ups and downs. And yeah, we had some moments where we disagreed, but never lost the respect for each other. And I think everybody relates to that, right? You have parents and, yeah, you might disagree with them. You might go another way, but you can't lose that respect, thy parents, right? Thy mother and thy father. It's there. It's printed, and it happens in reality. So that's, in a nutshell, our relationship. Now, in the second portion, I want to talk a little bit about what he did on the grander scale. That's in my life, but there's like things that people do not know. They get forgotten. Unfortunately, history sometimes isn't kind. I want to just bring these to your attention. But what we do every week, we play a song of the day. And this one was really kind of interesting how this one came about too. I was last Sunday, I had seen the Archbishop. Susan and I had visited him in the hospital Saturday night, and Sunday we prayed for him at church, and I was on my way to visit at the hospital when I got called from the family that he had passed away. So I got there just in time to offer a prayer, the Requiem prayer, Hokvots, over him with the family. And, you know, it was a very beautiful sight because he's got such loving and caring family, and they were his treasures, and they were all around him. And we said a prayer together. I was honored to be part of that. And a giant of the church, had taken his last breath. I'm sorry, it gets emotional sometimes. And there we were. I got home that night and I put together the daily message that I have on epostle.net dedicated to him, of course, fresh in my mind. And I made some comments about the generation. And interestingly enough, there was just an overwhelming number of people who have commented about that particular piece of writing. So I'm going to talk about that in a few minutes. But it was what happened afterwards. My sister calls me, completely unrelated. She's going to share with me that she discovered a folk singer who we had listened to back in the 70s. It's been 50 years. Janice Ian had put out something, a small little piece. And so she sent me the link, and I'm listening to it. And you know how you get into that wormhole on YouTube. One leads to another. And all of a sudden, the next piece by Janice Ian comes out from last year. So here is the song of the day, dedicated to our dear Duchess of Pazan's memory.
See these lines on my face? They're a map of where I've been. And the deeper they are traced, the deeper life has settled in. How do we survive living out our lives? And I could not trade a line, make it smooth and fine, or pretend that time stands still. I want to rest my soul here where it can grow without fear. Another line, another year. I'm still standing here. See these marks on my skin? They are the lyric of my life. Every story I begin just means another ends in sight. Only lovers understand. Skin just covers who I am. And I could not trade a line, make it smooth and fine, or pretend that time stands still. I want to rest my soul here where it can grow without fear. Another line, another year. I'm still standing here. See these bruises, see these scars. Hieroglyphs that tell the tale. You can read your fingertips like rail. And I would not trade a line, make it smooth and fine, or pretend that time stands still. I plan to rest my soul here where it can grow without fear. Another line, another year. I'm still standing here. I'm still standing here. I'm still standing here.
I'm Still Standing by Janice Ian, off of an album called The Light at the End of the Line. I don't know, just spoke to me on this occasion, and I hope it did for you too. I will have a link on today's show notes so you could check out not only this song, but all of the great music that she puts out. Back to our show.
Yeah.
We are back. We are paying tribute to Archbishop Vacha Hovsepia of blessed memory. The first half of today's show, I spoke about some of my personal remembrances, personal interactions, the beautiful relationship that we had. And the second portion, what I want to do is talk a little bit about some of the things that you may not have known, the big things that he had done, accomplishments that somehow get forgotten, unfortunately. As I mentioned a few moments ago, the day that he passed away, that evening I put together a daily message on epostle.net. And it got a lot of response, in particular this one portion where I talked about not only Archbishop Vacha, but his entire generation, what I call the God generation, those people who survived the genocide, and they brought their children, they had their children. I mean, imagine these people had the trauma of the past and now dealing with basically starting with nothing. And this is what I call the God generation, right? God, what is God? God has nothing, and he creates something. That's what these people did. And Archbishop Vacha and his generation, what an incredibly great generation. They had nothing. It was after genocide. And they come about and they put together a church. And they put together a church not only in concept, but also in mortar and brick. In other words, they build these churches. And the legacy, yes, is brick and mortar, but it's so much more. It's looking in and finding that generation and what made them tick. What made them, after losing everything, to go on the other side of the world and creating something? And this is that divine power that's inside this generation. In particularly, you saw it inside of Archbishop Vacha. One of the greatest legacies he leaves is the summer camp here in the Western Diocese, his love for children, for young kids, for youth, was manifest in the purchase of a campsite up in the Sequoias, a beautiful, beautiful place. I had the good fortune of running that camp for about 15 years, and it just a treasure. And in 2012 or 2013, it was named the Archbishop Vacha Hovsepia Camp. This was after his, what was called his retirement. They named it after him, Archbishop Hovnan Derde and the primate of our diocese, named it after Vacha Serpazon. And what a fitting tribute. I mean, it was such an important part where thousands of kids went through the program, met each other, and established relationships that they carry through their entire life. And I remember that day that they named it after him. First of all, I was honored that he called me. He says, I want you to be there, because he knows what we had gone through. We had put a lot into that, a lot of investment, and there were some unfair moments that came about. And so he called me, and it meant the world to me. And we went together, and they honored him by naming the camp after him. And I'll never forget the pride that he had in this accomplishment. But this accomplishment of the camp was only one small part of all that he did. I mean, we're talking major, big scale items. One of which was, again, like I said, these are things that most people don't remember. But I want you to think about this. 1991, June 1991. If I tell you 1991, if you kind of like put together a few things, you know that Armenia received its independence in September of 1991. Just before that, there was inklings of independence, glasnost, perestroika. We had Gorbachev coming and meeting with Reagan on regular terms. They were talking. And let's say it this way, that there was possibility that there could be independence, that this giant, the Soviet Union, might not last. There was talk, you know, it was happening right then. Now, 3 months before that, before Armenia got its independence, they were talking about June 1991. Vacha Serpazon calls together a meeting of clergy. And this is at the initiative of the Eastern, Western, and Canadian dioceses, all three of them. But Vacheslav Pozon becomes the chairman of this event. And this is done with the blessing of the Catholicos. The Catholicos is not there, but it's with his blessing that all of these clergymen from throughout the world get together. They convene for this international conference of clergy. And I remember being invited there to come and give a presentation about computing in the church, because personal computing was up and coming, and how could we use this as a means of proselytizing, of evangelizing, and getting the work of our church done. I mean, imagine this, 1991, we're talking about that. But there was something bigger happening, and that bigger thing was, of course, in Armenia, the survival of the people. After the 1988 earthquake, we had the floodgates were open, and now people were coming in to Armenia and taking people, what we call mart vor sortuchun. In other words, they were hunting people. Not in that respect. They were hunting for those souls and taking people and brainwashing them inside these cults, these sects, and we had documentation of that. So we had people coming there. We had priests from all over the world. We had some talking about the cults, about the sects. Of course, Karabakh, the war was taking place. Archbishop Barkim Martirosyan, the first time many of us met him, he was a young bishop coming there, and he was talking about the need for prayer. Let me read to you the statement that was made by Archbishop Vache Hovsepian, the chairman, as he's addressing this group. Now, remember, this is completely sanctioned by Etchmiadzin, by the Catholicos of all Armenians. And this is the first time that such a gathering is taking place outside of the Holy See. And I'm going to read, right, by the way, I'll have a link on today's show notes to the story, not only the story, but a lot of the lectures that were given at this conference. And like I said, you've probably never heard of it unless you listen to this, and you're going to get some information on this. But let me read to you Archbishop Vache's opening remarks. He said, there is a purpose for this gathering, and that purpose does not pursue any personal goal. Instead, as clergy of the Armenian Church, concerned with the spiritual, national, educational, and cultural circumstances of our people, as well as the social and political conditions, we will attempt over the next 5 days to reflect on and to scrutinize the present situation in Armenia and the diaspora. And with prayer, the power of the Holy Spirit, and the exchange of ideas and opinions, we will try to find a cure with the intention of progressing the thoughts expressed in the prepared presentations, and at the conclusion of the conference, we will issue statements and appeals to our people. We believe, in order to keep the Armenian Church in her primary mission and to further brighten her future, we need clergy who are aware of their calling, dedicated and prepared. These will be the ones who will keep alive the Armenian faith, language, and traditions, the ones who will give direction to the faithful. So he goes on, and it's a very interesting, which, you know, I just, this week has been kind of interesting for me, because I've been listening to some of his messages and reading a lot of the things that he's put together, and it's really remarkable. But he goes on to talk about some of the issues that we as clergy, now listen to this, this is 1991, with clergy from throughout the world, he's calling on them to make statements. And these are the issues that he's bringing up. Are you ready? Okay, this, remember, 1991, he's talking about these things. This is who Vache Serpazan was. He's talking to the clergy as a senior clergyman, as the archbishop of one of the archbishops of the church. says, talking about religious educational books, revision of services, and participation of the faithful, preparation of educational tapes, the status of freelance clergy, the requirements for ordination. What are those requirements? Marriage for clergy, divorce of clergymen, the conditions for defrocking a clergyman, ordination of women to the diaconate and priesthood, relationship of the Armenian Church and the Armenian Catholics and Protestants, having various versions of divine liturgies for feast days, for regular Sundays, for summer sessions. Can you believe this? They're talking about this. The use of non-Armenian music during our liturgies, re-evaluation of the canons related to marriage, interreligious marriages, the validity of civil marriages, cohabitation without marriage, conceiving out of wedlock, adoption, age, race, color, contraception and abortion, euthanasia, second marriage, minimum age for clergy, infant baptism, adult baptism, status of the godfather, and the place of baptism. Now, this is just, the list goes on and on. And I'm going to just put a link on today's show notes. If you're interested, I would definitely say the link will lead you to the entire conference. Pick out Archbishop Vache Hovsepian's opening remarks. Remarkable. Remarkable because he believed in this, so much so that he was willing to put it out on the line. This was something that he believed in, the power of people getting together. And did you catch it? With the guidance of the Holy Spirit. He believed that the church was led by the Holy Spirit. I should have mentioned earlier that, you know, when I did my master's thesis, it was about a theodicy. In other words, the answer to the problem of evil. And he had given me a lot of theological background to the entire story. And you can read that. I'll put a link on the show notes too. You could read the entire thesis that I wrote. It's kind of dated, but 1980 I wrote it. And you could see some of his comments along with some prolific personalities of the Armenian Church, including Archbishop Didon Nersoyan. So from this clergy conference, you know, it's a very unique. In fact, in his final statements, the way he ends it, he says, "We bring these issues to your attention." He says, "As we stated earlier, this convocation is the first of its kind. We think the serious consideration should be given to making the official an official body. Moreover, we hope that during the course of these meetings, various subcommittees would be formed or appointed." Now, this never went past this one meeting. This was a single event. And that's why I want to bring it to your attention. Unfortunately, didn't continue. But this was what Vache Sepozan was good for. First of all, he was out there. He was with the people. He knew what the needs of the people were. But he really wanted to put it inside of a structure. He was incredible at putting structure to it. He knew bylaws. He put together bylaws. Now, people say, "Well, wait. All we need is a Bible." Well, what do you think a Bible is? Where do you think you get a Bible from? This always gets to me. People come up to me, "You know what? I'm spiritual, but I'm not religious." What does that mean? You know, what is religion but a means by which the faith comes to you? Do you realize, think about this for a moment, everything you know about Jesus Christ, everything you know about Jesus Christ is because of the Christian religion, is because it was codified, it was put together, it was because there were people who said, "Here's the story, let's write the Bible, let's put these stories together, let's put them together into a canon." This isn't until the 4th or 5th century that we have a Bible, and that Bible gets translated, the Bible gets passed on through generations. Where? Through the church. Everything you know about it is because of the institution. So this whole idea that the institution is not necessary doesn't even make sense. And Vachisilpazan was keen on understanding the need for us to put order to all of this. He spent a lot of time on bylaws, on putting structure to the organization. And he was called on, this is very, very important to remember, 1994, His Holiness Vazgen I passed away. Of blessed memory, His Holiness served as Catholicos, Chief Patriarch of the Armenian people, for 39 years. It was one of the longest reigns of any Catholicoi in the Armenian Church. Well, with that, there was other problems. Don't forget that this is in the Soviet Union. Most of his tenure was in the Soviet Union. And there wasn't time, there wasn't opportunity to develop these kind of structures. So there hadn't been an election process for 39 years. So who do you call? You call Vachisilpazan, who put together the order, put together, you're going through the different elections, going through the different minutes and the recordings that they had from 1955 and previous elections. He puts together the structure for electing a Catholicos, the need for a national ecclesiastical assembly. How do you do it? How do you elect delegates? Who are the delegates? Okay, you've got this huge diocese in Russia where there aren't members, but everybody's a member. So you've got something like, you know, a million members. Whereas in California, where you have this active group of people here, but you don't have members per se. Membership is by people who fill out a pledge card, for instance, right? Or a membership form. And so you have in California, where you have a lot of Armenians, but you have a very small membership, quote-unquote, membership base. So how do you do apples and oranges? How do you put them together to come up with some kind of formula? Well, you call in Vachisilpazan. And that's what he did. He put together a formula. He put together the constitution, the means by which we could deliver the Catholicos, have an election. And it was after Catholicos Garekin II, I believe, after he was elected. It might have been Karekin I, but I believe it was Karekin II that he asked Vachisilpazan to be in charge of the Constitutional Committee. In other words, let's put together a constitution for the entire Armenian Church, because we have bylaws that are legal documents here in the United States. In the Western Diocese may be one, the Canadian might be another, Eastern Diocese have another set of bylaws, and most of them are relatively similar, but when compared to some of the other situations where we have, particularly in the Middle East, they're not even close, you know. So how do you make one constitution for the entire Armenian Church? Well, you don't just sit and write it. You have to go through the history. You have to know the history, have to study the history and see what's been done in the past and so on and so on. Now, does everybody have that gift? I certainly don't. I'll be the first one to admit. No, I have no desire to do that kind of stuff. But I admire Archbishop Vache would sit and he, the time that he put into that meticulously. I mean, you look at some of the constitutional work that he's done. It's all based on the history, on the documents that he had from previous things, and he's put it all together and just beautifully done. Now, that's on a very, very large scale. And in all things, there is the dignity of the Armenian Church, keeping the Armenian Church above all else sacred. Now, I'm going to tell you one more thing, and then before we call it a day, I had a very unique opportunity, and this is, like I said, there's things that you guys don't know, but do you know that we came very close to having the first Armenian deaconess in America? And this too is documented. I'll put a link on today's show notes. Archbishop Vache Hovsepian ordained the first woman acolyte, and she was on course to become the first deacon. He had given his consent to it. Now, what was very special about this woman was that she was not just the cutesy effect. And by that, I mean, now they ordain, they give scarves to women and they say, okay, you know, girls can come and hold candles for a few years and everything. No. Archbishop Vache was fair on this level. He found somebody who was qualified. Sure, her name was Seta. This is 1984 or 85. She was a young lady serving at the church that I was in Cupertino. And Archbishop Vache consented and ordained her. And it was going to open the door. Unfortunately, what happened is that Bishop from the Eastern Diocese got involved in it and forbade it. Not in our diocese, but over there. And it brought up the question of, does one bishop's rights, can they be usurped or can they be nullified by another one? And these are bigger issues than what I want to talk about right now. I'm going to put a link on today's show notes, and you can look into it. You could read it for yourself. You can see the videos that are out there. Basically, Archbishop Vache was a man who was ahead of his time. What he did for me on a personal level is something that I think he's done for hundreds of people, if not thousands. He's inspired us. At my ordination, I remember his words exactly. He looked at me and he said, "A Christian is a restless person." That word restless has resonated inside of me for the last 40 years because I don't sit still. I know that I'm restless only because he said it, and I realized that, yes, it's true. You know, they say you live once. No, you die once. You live every single day, and every single day has to be filled with this restlessness to do new things, to do the things that God has commanded you to do. And he challenged me every time that I met with him. He challenged me to reach that restlessness. It was only a few years after my ordination that one day, as we were singing aloud the song, I think, Marmin de Runagan, and there is a verse in there that goes, "Anhankist parparov." Anhankist is restless. And I realized Anhankist parparov, with the restless words they speak, that is a reflection of what's in heaven, that there is a restlessness because you want to see things done. The angels are restless. You want to see things done. He's left that legacy inside of me, and I know he's left a legacy great throughout the world. People have been touched, influenced by him. He is a giant of the church who will be missed, who will be missed by many, many people. On several occasions, I've heard Archbishop Vache speak about the parable of the talents, that each of us is endowed by God with certain gifts and talents. And he would say, and he'd reiterate, that use them, do not abuse them. And he'd stand up and he'd tell us straight into our face, you do not have the right to say no to the talents that God has given you. Use them. You do not have the right to say no. And I think that the greatest tribute that we can pay him is to take heed of the words and advice that he gave, to keep him alive, the beautiful stories, the beautiful memories, and to celebrate those with our lives. I say this at funerals, I do for others. Now I'm going to try to take my own advice and keep him alive by doing the good things, by always being restless, by pushing myself to the limits and using the talents that God has endowed us with. Final rites, final services for Archbishop Vache will take place next Wednesday, December 28th at 9 a.m. in the morning. That's Pacific time. And you can follow it on the Diocesan Facebook page. It will be streamed. All right, that does it. Here's Susie with her announcement. I'll be back with my final announcements of what's going on, what's happening, and how to get in touch. Here's Susie.
Before getting back to the next step with Father Vazquez, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this ministry is supported through the heartfelt donations of listeners like you. Thanks for keeping us in your prayers and partnering with this expanding and dynamic outreach. The next step is entering homes and communities with a solid message proclaiming God's message of love, forgiveness, and compassion. We look forward to your comments and words of encouragement. Please consider partnering in this dynamic ministry by making a contribution. By pressing on the donate button on our website, you can set up automatic donations, either weekly, monthly, or annually. Your donation goes a long way in furthering this ministry. Even more, tell your friends and family by sharing the Next Step link or website with them. We're on iTunes and Blueberry, as well as Facebook and Twitter. We are excited about this ministry and invite you to share in our enthusiasm. This is
thank
Susie,
you, Susie,
wishing
for
you
that
all
announcement,
of God's
and thank you all of
life.
You for all the,
we now return
the love
to the
and
next
the support and the
Father
prayers
Vazquez.
That you send our way. I really, really appreciate it. I know we are in the Christmas season, and you're saying, well, what happened? I mean, where's our Christmas message? Actually, you get the Christmas message daily. We had an incredible Advent season, in other words, preparation for Christmas, and you'll find all of those daily messages on epostle.net. Now, you can set your device, your Apple, go to Apple Podcasts on your Android device. You could go to Stitcher Radio, you can go to Blueberry, whatever podcatcher you use. Use it and subscribe to epostle.net to the different programming, including the Next Step, including this one. But the daily messages are short. They're 3 to 4 minutes long, just something to get you kick-started, something to think about during the day. During this Advent season, we've been preparing for Christmas. Highly recommend if you get a chance to listen to the episodes, because what you find is when you get to Christmas, all of a sudden the Christmas message becomes more real in your life. Now, these messages are all available in written form as well as in audio form at epostle.net. That's apostle with an E. That's apostolic evangelism for an electronic universe. And it's a net, not a com, epostle.net, okay? And love to see you over there, and please follow along. You just go to the media tab, and you'll find Orthodoxy for Today. You'll find the Next Steps, all kinds of stuff. Very, very, a lot of good stuff. Okay, let's say it that way. I want to do a big shout out for Sosi. Really, really appreciate what she's doing on Instagram and Facebook. If you're following us there, she's the genius who's putting together the small little ads, the invites for people to come and follow along. Hey, listen, I'd love to hear from you. We are at feedback@epostle.net. Okay, feedback is the address, feedback@epostle.net. Drop us a line. Tell us what you think. I'd love to hear from you. I read everything that you send. Can't promise that I get back to you at least right away, but I do read everything that does come in. All right, that does it for tonight. This Sunday and the next few weeks, I'm going to be at the St. Gregory Armenian Church in Pasadena, beautiful Pasadena, California. That's Sunday, December 25th, January 1st, and the Armenian Christmas Feast, the 5th and the 6th, okay? So I'd love to see you there if you happen to be in the area. If not, you can get it on St. Gregory YouTube channel, and I will have a link on today's show notes so you can just go there and you'll see me, okay? You'll be with us. You'll pray with us. You'll be part of the congregation. All right, my friends, I want to wish you all a very Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and before you start sending me notes and saying, well, don't you know our Armenian Christmas is January 6th? Listen to my podcast. You might learn something that, yes, it is on January 6th, but a Christian celebrates. Well, you check it out, okay? On behalf of our producer, Susie, and myself, Father Vazquez, I look forward to taking the next step with you next week.
stand by for disclaimer.
And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Anything else?
Jesus is the reason of the season.
Yeah, Jesus is the reason of the season.
Apostle.net.
Yeah.
Apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe.